in the limelight.
Boris Johnson will not oppose a second independence referendum if the Scottish National Party wins a majority in the election next month, according to Nicola Sturgeon, with some UK government ministers reportedly conceding it is an inevitability. In an interview with The Guardian, Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said, "If people in Scotland vote for a party saying, when the time is right, there should be an independence referendum, you cannot stand in the way of that, and I don't think that is what will happen." The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Libby Brooks and Jessica Elgott. The piece is titled, "PM Will Allow Second Referendum If SNP Wins," says Sturgeon. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will not oppose a second independence referendum if the Scottish National Party wins a majority in the election next month, according to Nicola Sturgeon, who has said, with some UK government ministers reportedly conceding it is an inevitability. In an interview with The Guardian, Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said, "If people in Scotland vote for a party saying, when the time is right, there should be an independence referendum, you cannot stand in the way of that, and I don't think that is what will happen." 10 Downing Street insiders suggested there may be tactical attempts to keep the inevitability of a referendum in play, but that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson was staunchly against such a move. The UK government has quietly dropped the use of once-in-a-generation language around the referendum, due to fears it may give Scottish voters who are still undecided about independence, but keen on Nicola Sturgeon's other policies, a license to vote for the SNP if they believe there is no chance a referendum will be granted. But Boris Johnson is said to be adamant in private that he will not be the Prime Minister who permits a referendum, and the Conservatives will hammer home the message that holding such a poll during a pandemic would be deeply irresponsible. Reports in the Sunday Times suggested that whilst the UK government's position remained that it was opposed to granting Holyrood the requisite powers to hold a legal referendum, senior Conservatives believe this will be hard to sustain should the Scottish National Party SNP triumph on 6th of May, and that Boris Johnson will be better off forcing a vote during the economic upheaval likely to follow the pandemic, to underline the risk of Scotland leaving the United Kingdom. Last week, polling by Ipsos and Mori for STB News and Opinion for Sky News put the Scottish National Party on course to win a majority and a historic fourth term in office. Asked whether she believed the alternative to continued Westminster refusal of putting a referendum bill through the Scottish Parliament would be necessary, Nicola Sturgeon said, "I'm pretty confident that it won't be. But you know, people will always challenge that, because of what the supposed position of the UK government is." She said she believed discussion within the UK government had moved away from "we can stop a referendum" to "when would it happen and on what basis would it happen." A panel-based poll for the Sunday Times found that if the Scottish National Party were to win a majority, Scottish voters would be evenly split over whether there should be a referendum, with 44% in favour and the same proportion against. Nicola Sturgeon also raised concerns about the tactics of ALBA, the new party that Alex Salmond claims can help secure a supermajority for independence of Scotland, a term she dismissed as daft rhetoric. A simple majority of pro-independence MSPs would provide a sufficient mandate, she maintained. Nicola Sturgeon said she believed her predecessor's talk of demonstrations and unauthorized plebiscites could put off undecided voters who had become more open-minded about independence since Brexit. If you're somebody that voted no in 2014, and that because of Brexit or other things are now open-minded to independence, and I know an awful lot of these people, and you hear somebody say they think they can bulldoze their way to independence in spite of public opinion, I would think, maybe I don't want to engage in this anymore, she said. Sturgeon said she would continue to give the honest answer about her concerns regarding Alex Salmond's suitability to return to public office following accusations of sexual harassment, which Alex Salmond has vehemently denied. Further comments, Nicola Sturgeon said, in my opinion, are there questions about the appropriateness of the return to public office of somebody who was accused of serious inappropriate behaviour towards women, who was acquitted of any criminality, and I will never question that, who in the course of a criminal trial seemed to suggest that he had behaved in ways that were not always appropriate, admitted something to me that I believe was deeply inappropriate, and has never really reckoned with that, has never reflected and been prepared to say, I regret that and wouldn't do that again in the future. Nicola Sturgeon also agreed that fallout from the Scottish Government's botched handling of sexual harassment complaints against Alex Salmond was likely to have discouraged other women from coming forward. Sturgeon said that probably none of the resulting inquiries had got to the bottom of the culture of complicity around Alex Salmond's alleged inappropriate behaviour, described by the original complainers in evidence to the Holyrood Committee. And she committed to the Scottish National Party reflecting on its complaints processes and procedures in the light of the inquiries.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the worst method of life. A healthy economy is one which strengthens social relations and embraces all members of society. When wealth is concentrated in certain individuals or groups who refuse to allow the rest to benefit, a cancer takes root in that society that will eventually destroy its economic health to the detriment of all. Imam Ridha alayhi salam refers to this as the worst type of livelihood and economic life. Some people are miser. They don't spend in the way of Allah. They don't realize that this wealth is a trust of Allah, which comes with clear instructions of Allah on what to do with it. But the wretched human being thinks that he owns it. This is where our problem is. Everything that we possess, all that wealth that we have, unfortunately, somehow, over the course of time, we start to believe, we start to establish this false belief that it is something of my own. I own it. I am the master of it. I am the real owner. No, brothers and sisters, this ownership is only, as we call it, a'tibari. It is only in this world. It is only to maintain this world. In reality, you have to keep reminding yourself that this wealth or any skill or anything that you possess, any of your assets, the real owner of that asset, that wealth, is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's not you, it's not me. This is going to open up that door of looking at your wealth with a different viewpoint. And this is where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent very clear instructions on how to deal with your wealth. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the worst method of life. And Imam Ridha alayhi salam has called miserliness and being miser to be the worst type of life in economic sense of things. Now, charity we know is essential. The existence of countless starving, poor, hungry, and destitute Muslims and non-Muslims in the world points to the need for this essential teaching to be put in practice. Affluent Muslims may not realize how their wealth could strengthen whole communities. Giving charity correctly is crucial to both the well-being of the needy as well as the ultimate happiness of the wealthy. The Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have emphasized this principle repeatedly. As Imam Ridha, the 8th infallible Imam, has said, "The worst people from an economic viewpoint are those who do not offer livelihood to others from their own livelihood, and others are excluded from their life." Brothers and sisters, this is like where Islam is such a great and beautiful religion that not only looks out for an individual, rather it looks out for the entire society, and rather it looks out for the entire humanity. This is where Islam's global viewpoint of how the equilibrium in the world can be maintained, can be understood. You know, this is the beginning of that. Allah has given different qualities to different people. He tries and He puts on trial His servants in this world. He wants to see who is the obedient servant and who is disobedient. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden might not be building a physical border wall, but he is continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the U.S. government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Stay with us for part one of a three-part article written by Will Lennon. The piece is titled U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. The article has been taken from truthout.com website. The United States government plans to expand a program for monitoring the Mexico border through cutting-edge artificial intelligence technology. At the vanguard of the project is Anduril, a NERDIC technology firm with ties to Palantir. Delivery orders, statements of work and contracts obtained by Shadowproof help to illustrate the scope and potential outcomes of Anduril's work with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP. The project, which involves migrant tracking artificial intelligence housed in surveillance towers and drones, clashes with President Joe Biden's rhetoric on immigration. Overall, Joe Biden's immigration plan reads like it was crafted in response to half a decade of building the wall, sloganeering. In addition to raising the ceiling on refugee admissions, creating a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, and closing a loophole that allowed Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to operate in sanctuary cities, Joe Biden has pledged there will not be another foot of wall constructed. Biden might not be building a physical wall, but he's continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the United States government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where CBP, Customs and Border Protection, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Throughout 2021 and 2022, a series of surveillance towers will be installed in Texas and in California. Customs and Border Protection is in the process of more than doubling its use of the towers, which monitor the surroundings for miles and transmit intelligence to Customs and Border Protection and its Border Patrol subsidiary. The towers are linked to drones, and the data they collect feed into a powerful artificial intelligence system. Anduril Industries, the flagship company behind the new border surveillance project, is a hybrid. The California technology startup was founded by veterans of SpaceX, Facebook, and Oculus. It is sort of place where executives speak in pop culture references and where workers scoot around on hoverboards. But it is also a company that aims to use its clout with the federal government to level up to a corporate defense titan like General Dynamics or Raytheon. Petra Molnar, a researcher and associate director at the Refugee Law Laboratory, works primarily on technology and refugee issues in Europe and Canada. But she sees parallels between conditions at the U.S.-Mexico border and those in the Mediterranean region, where migrants sometimes drown trying to cross into Europe. Petra Molnar said in an interview with Shadow Proof, "There's a lot of discretion given to decisions made at or around the border," adding, "When you're looking at this kind of opaque discretionary decision-making regime, it's ripe for new surveillance and technology that are making their way into that space with very little regulation and oversight. And the real industries typically competes with companies making weaponry like tanks and missiles, but its focus on surveillance technology still fits within a US paradigm that treats the border like a war zone. The militarization of the southern border in the modern era has been accompanied by similarly increasing militant rhetoric and strategy. For example, under former President Barack Obama, Customs and Border Protection's mission statement had the agency acting as America's front line and protecting the American public against the so-called terrorists. In a 2018 profile, an Anduril Industries executive told Wired that the company's border surveillance program helps you conceptualize what it would be like in Afghanistan, adding, "It's the same problem." Soon after Anduril Industries was officially incorporated in 2017, Donald Trump used the language of war to describe conditions at the U.S.-Mexico border. Trump called a caravan of migrants heading to the United States from Central America an invasion and deployed thousands of troops to the southern border with Mexico throughout his presidency. Anduril Industries higher-ups tend to talk more about their work for the U.S. military than they do their projects at the border. However, according to U.S. aspending.org, Anduril Industries' most lucrative contracts are with the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, their Customs and Border Protection Agency's parent agency. As early as 2018, Anduril Industries had pilot border security programs running in the El Paso and San Diego metropolitan areas. Emails obtained from a Freedom of Information Act request show that an Anduril Industries representative scheduled a technology demonstration with the San Diego Police Department in April of 2019. And a work order indicates Department of Homeland Security continues to request support for the San Diego sector legacy towers. Trey Stevens, one of the venture capitalists who helped get Anduril Industries off the ground, said he hoped to see the company become the next Palantir. Palantir is a technology company founded by Peter Thiel that specializes in netting contracts from the military, from the Department of Homeland Security, and from other government agencies. ICE's Falcon and investigative case management system were developed by Palantir. Falcon is a database for tracking immigrants and transnational crime. ICM gives ICE access to data on immigrant targets, including home address and biometrics, and allows them to see data from other agencies, including the Drug Enforcement Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI. If Anduril Industries really does aim to become the next Palantir, border security is a smart place to start. Well, dear listeners, that was the first part of Will Lennon's article, U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. Tune in tomorrow for the second part of this three-part series.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon all our brothers and sisters, our dear good listeners. You're listening to Youth Station only on IRIB English Radio. I'm Hassanain, and we have in our studio with us Sister Zainab.
Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, other life forms, welcome to Youth Station.
How are you, Sister Zainab?
I'm good.
Sister Zainab, nowadays, you know, all the people, you know, everyone's behind becoming rich. They all want to be rich. What about you? Are you rich? Like, what do you think of yourself? Where do you put yourself in the category of the rich people? Or what do you think?
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. I would put myself in the category of being the rich.
MashaAllah.
I had nothing to do with it, though. But I think I need explore that question of yours a bit.
Okay, now, when I ask you, like, are you rich? So, like, rich as in, what do you think of, like, rich as
okay.
in money?
Okay, yeah, let's start with our definition of rich.
No, when
first.
You said that you're rich, what did you mean by that?
I personally think I'm rich in every aspect, or in most...
What do you mean by every aspect? So, you mean to say that rich is not just by money?
See...
Not just by wealth?
Dictionary definition of rich is... Number one, having a great deal of money or assets.
Uh-huh.
Synonym, wealthy.
Which you have a lot?
Yes. Number two, existing in plentiful quantities, abundant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So obviously there are two aspects to being rich. It's either money wealthy,
mm-hmm.
right? You have abundant money and you're rich.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's great. That's dangerous, though, I feel. Because...
Why is it dangerous?
Because Day of Judgment happens and Allah questions you for every single dime and penny you earned mm-hmm. and you spent.
Yeah, like what way did you spend it?
Exactly. How did you earn it and how did you spend it? Why did you spend it like that? Yeah. You know, they...
Like as we say that hisab will be
exactly.
longer.
Yeah. Exactly. And they will be delayed before the gates of heaven if mm-hmm. they end up in heaven.
Okay,
right?
Now let me ask you, like, what are the different types of, you know, aspects of being rich? What do
and
you
then
think?
There's the other aspect of having been wealthy in other assets. Asset doesn't necessarily have mm-hmm. to be monetary.
Yeah.
Right? I can be rich in friends, which I consider myself to be very mm-hmm. much. I have like a few friends that mm-hmm. I can legit go to their door in the middle of the night, tell them that I committed murder.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be like, let me get my shovel and my car keys. Uh-huh. No questions asked.
Uh-huh.
All right?
So you've got some good friends.
Some
yeah.
very good, very trustworthy, very loyal friends. I am rich in the love that I receive.
Like partner in crime.
My partners in crime.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I think I'm very rich and wealthy in terms of the love I receive and I give out.
Okay, so that's good. That's really good. So we have the idea of different aspects of being rich. So anyone can be rich by the wealth.
Yeah.
And some people might be rich by the character.
Mm.
And some people also might be rich, you know, in terms of spirituality.
Absolutely.
So let's go on with the second one. What do you think by being rich by the character?
Rich in character, I think... Okay, that I might not be because I'm very socially awkward. I'm socially awkward. I'm an introvert. I don't know how to socialize. I don't know how to make small talk. But for people who are, who I've seen that are rich in character and personality, they're charismatic, they're well-spoken, they carry themselves very well, they're intelligent. I mean, talking about these things, so one
basically know how to carry themselves, like, you know, in the society.
One would attribute these qualities to someone who's rich in money, too. Have you seen most people who are filthy
rich? So
they're
almost, like, connected.
I don't know whether it's the money that makes a person interesting or whether they were interesting, so interesting that they became rich. Because, like, when we talk rich, money rich, who's the first person that comes to your mind?
Bill Gates.
Really? I was thinking Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is assumed to be richer than Bill Gates, right?
Nah,
I don't know. I have to look it up.
It's Jeff, the richest
Jeff Bezos?
Guy in the world. Yeah.
I don't like Jeff Bezos. I don't even find him charismatic or interesting. But Bruce Wayne was.
You don't
very
like Jeff Bezos, but you still use Amazon. Okay, so when we say that someone is not rich,
yeah.
So do we mean like they don't have money, that they're financially challenged?
Oh my God, Bill Gates is actually richer than Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne's net worth is $9.2 billion.
Oh, yeah.
And Bill Gates' net worth officially of 13th January 2021.
Okay, why are they so rich? Why are they so rich?
Because they were stinking geniuses.
Okay, so you mean to say that the people who are not rich, they are not smart
enough to be that rich. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bruce Wayne was a genius. Bill Gates is a genius. Who else? Elon Musk is a genius. Mm-hmm. But then again, I think it has a lot to do with time and era as well, because there were geniuses before the world wars.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And they couldn't necessarily make a lot of money out of their intelligence. Mm-hmm. Or even now, we have Nobel Prize winners for physics, math, and peace, and this, and for literature, and this, and that.
Yeah.
But they aren't necessarily filthy rich off of that, you know, the genius that they have. But then we have authors like J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
She is a genius,
yeah.
Right? She's an imaginative, creative genius in literature. And she became a cajillionaire.
So, like, being rich, does it depend upon someone's intelligence?
I think so, yes, because we even
like, if you say that, then it means that, you know, all the people who are not rich, not necessarily them being poor, but, you know, them being not rich, like middle-class people, so does it mean that they're not smart?
No. I'm saying that 90% of rich people, unless they were born into the money, right? They were, like, someone like, I don't know, Donald Trump. I wouldn't consider him as a genius, right? But he was rich anyway, because mostly he was born into the money.
Okay, do you think that being rich is good?
But, let me just clarify this.
Uh-huh.
90% of people who are self-established, self-made billionaires are geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
They were smart enough to make themselves into billionaires, right?
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean that whoever's
not rich,
whoever's intelligent has to become rich. But whoever becomes rich has to be intelligent.
That's not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So there could be middle-class people, like middle-class people who are really intelligent and smart. Mm-hmm. They either never had the drive, you know, they weren't money-minded.
Yeah.
They never had the drive or the reason to make themselves filthy rich. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were, I mean, their life circumstances were different.
No, but still, I think that the many smart people out there, the many intelligent people, but they don't get chance, you know.
There's also that. Exactly.
Yeah, there might be any of their personal issues, personal problems. They they're smart, but they couldn't go to the university. They couldn't get the admission in the university. So that's the reason that they stay behind. So it's all about the, you know, time, you know. So.
Or maybe they just never cared to get rich. I can't imagine someone like Nikola Tesla caring. He was a filthy genius, right? It was his innovative theories that made so many inventions that we have today, including the many of the means through someone like Elon Musk earned his fortune possible. Nikola Tesla died in absolute poverty. He died alone. He died poor, but he was a stinking genius.
Yeah.
And I think the reason was that he didn't care to, like, make himself rich or known or achieve materialistic.
Okay, so what do you think that being rich, is it good? Is it good being rich?
Depends.
You know, I guess there's one of these ayahs in the Holy Quran. You know, when people get rich, like not exactly rich, you know, when people feel that they're not dependent on anything, that, you know, they get far away from Allah,
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yeah.
So they don't feel any, you know, need for God. They don't need feel any need.
Yeah, yeah. They so become arrogant.
Yeah, they exactly. They become arrogant. So sometimes, you know, being rich has also some drawbacks. You know, every coin has two sides. You know, being rich is being rich itself. It's a good thing.
Is it though?
Yeah, it's a good thing itself. Like being rich, you can. It has got consequences.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the thing. Whether the consequences are worth it or not. You know?
Yeah, like if someone's rich, you know, being rich, he can help the poor people.
Exactly. That's why I said it depends.
Yeah.
Depends on the goal he has behind becoming rich.
Yeah.
And how he spends his wealth. How like he
some people
his wealth.
Are rich, but they're selfish. They don't help the needy. You know, so, you know, as people get their wealth, you know, they get farther away from Allah.
And another thing, I think there's a certain standard, an average for being rich. And if you exceed that...
What do you mean by that?
I'll explain. If you exceed that average of being rich, then it has not been through a sound, healthy, and sometimes even lawful means.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that certain elites in the world, that 1% that is constantly talked about... Who are filthy rich?
Yeah,
are filthy rich through corrupt means, and they've only reached that degree of wealthiness.
Yeah, that's a completely different thing. Yeah,
other
no, that's a completely different thing. You're talking about how did they become rich?
Yeah, so I'm
that's
a different about, thing. I'm saying that there should be a norm for rich.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
So
yeah.
there's the poor people in the community. But then again, if we look at it from a very Islamic, idealistic Islamic worldview, there shouldn't be that much of a gap between the different classes of a society.
That's right, yeah.
Right? Because there shouldn't be poor people.
Like if someone's rich, he's a good man, so he can use his wealth in the right way.
That's why we have concepts, such as zakat and hummus and this and that, you know, so that it can balance it out.
Right. I
think it's like some sort of, it's sort of like an Islamic socialism that allows people to benefit from one another in a way that makes society a bit more just.
True. Let's just discuss about being rich in spirituality. What do you think about that?
Being rich in spirituality, I don't think that has anything to do with anything.
You know, you're rich in spirituality, like when you purify yourself, when you're closer to Allah.
Exactly.
So that's why it's not by money, but it's by, it depends upon your, you know, your closest to Allah.
But still, it has to a great extent, it needs a lot of determination, just like being money rich.
No, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to work a lot upon ourselves that we need to purify ourselves.
Absolutely.
We need to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We need to follow every of his command.
Exactly.
So.
And at the end of the day, that's the most valuable form of wealth.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're rich spiritually, you're set in this world and the hereafter.
You know, the wealth we're talking about, the materialistic wealth, that you get by money, you can have this materialistic world. But it's just only in this dunya. But what about the hereafter?
Exactly.
What helps is being rich in your spirituality. You being close to Allah and you being like, you purifying yourself, you being pure. So we're running out of time, and thank you so much to your audience for staying with us. And thank you so much, Sister Zainab. And I pray that inshallah we all be rich in both this world and the hereafter. Thank you so much. Until the next show, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
My love, my life, my days, my nights, my wealth, my prayers are for you. Now I know how it's like to have your precious love in my life. Now I know how it feels to finally be at peace inside. I wish that everybody how amazing it feels to love you.
wish that everyone could see how love has set me free. Set me free and made me strong.
In the limelight.
The first spring donor retreat after a defeat for a political party is typically a moment of reflection and renewal as officials chart a new direction forward. But with former President Donald J. Trump determined to keep his grip on the Republican Party and the party's base as adhered to him as ever, the coming together of the Republican National Committee's top donors in South Florida this weekend is less a moment of reset and more a reminder of the continuing tensions and schisms roiling the GOP. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Shane Goldmacher, Maggie Haberman, and Jonathan Martin. The piece is titled A Tremendous Complication, GOP Dances Around Trump's Lingering Presence. The first spring donor retreat after a defeat for a political party is typically a moment of reflection and renewal as officials chart a new direction forward. But with former President Donald J. Trump determined to keep his grip on the Republican Party and the party's base as adhered to him as ever, the coming together of the Republican National Committee's top donors in South Florida this weekend is less a moment of reset and more a reminder of the continuing tensions and schisms roiling the GOP. The same former president who last month sent the Republican National Committee a cease and desist letter demanding they stop using his likeness to raise money will on Saturday evening serve as the party's fundraising headliner. A tremendous complication was how Fred Zeidman, a veteran Republican fundraiser in Texas, described Donald Trump's lingering presence on the political scene. The delicate dance between Mr. Trump and the Republican Party after losing the House, the Senate, and the White House on his watch will manifest in some actual shuttle bus diplomacy on Saturday, as the party's top donors attend a series of receptions and panels at the Four Seasons Resort before traveling to Mar-a-Lago, the former president's private club, to hear Donald Trump speak. Donald Trump's insistence on leading the Republican Party affects every member, Mr. Zeidman said, as lawmakers and would-be elected officials jockey for a Trump endorsement that was as powerful in a Republican primary as it could be problematic in a general election. He's already proven that he wants to have a major say or keep control of the party, and he's already shown every sign that he's going to primary everybody that has not been supportive of him, Mr. Zeidman said. He complicates everything so much. Among other things, Donald Trump is considering running again in 2024. Though few of his allies believe he will follow through, his presence could have a chilling effect on other potential candidates. The party is still very much revolving around Donald Trump, said Andrea Katsmatidis, a chairwoman of the Manhattan Republican Party and a donor who will be at the retreat. He was the one who very much revived the party when we weren't winning. Also inescapable is the fact that Donald Trump has quickly built a political war chest that rivals that of the Republican National Committee. An advisor to Donald Trump said he currently had about $85 million on hand, compared with nearly $84 million for the Republican National Committee. Send your donation to Save America PAC. Donald Trump urged supporters last month not to RINOs, the derisive acronym for Republicans in name only. Mr. Trump has appeared as passionate about punishing Republicans who crossed him, especially those who supported his second impeachment, as he has about taking back the House and the Senate in 2022. For party officials, the goal is keeping the energy that has propelled Donald Trump to success inside the Republican tent, while not entirely allowing the former president to dominate it. Ronna McDaniel, the Republican National Committee chairwoman, whom Donald Trump supported for a second term, has vowed to remain neutral in a potential 2024 primary should Donald Trump run again. "It is a difficult balancing act," said Bill Palatucci, a Republican National Committee man from New Jersey who has been critical of Donald Trump. "The president certainly has devoted followers," Mr. Palatucci said, "but he also more than offended a lot of people with his conduct since the November election, which culminated in his helping to incite a riot on 6th of January. Several Republicans who are considered likely to run for president in 2024, including Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, and Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, were scheduled to speak to the Republican National Committee's donors at the Four Seasons. Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State and CIA director who served under Donald Trump, has been scheduled to speak on Friday but did not attend the gathering. Notably absent are two leading Republican figures who also skipped the last big Republican gathering, the Conservative Political Action Conference that Donald Trump attended. Former Vice President Mike Pence, who's starting his own political advocacy group, and Nikki Haley, the former United Nations ambassador. Some donors are hoping to quickly move past Mr. Trump, but they are also focused on the current Oval Office occupant. "It is very important the Republican Party puts Donald Trump as far into the past as possible," said William Obendorf, an investor in California who has given millions to GOP candidates but fiercely opposes the former President Donald Trump. However, if Joe Biden does not ensure that major pieces of legislation have bipartisan support, it is he who will bear more responsibility than any group of Republican donors ever could for resurrecting Mr. Trump's political future and fortunes, he added. Among donors, the jockeying for favor and financing extends beyond Donald Trump and the Republican National Committee. On Thursday and Friday, a separate but overlapping gathering for Republican contributors was held at Donald Trump's private club. An investors' meeting of the Conservative Partnership Institute, CPI, a nonprofit organization. Mark Meadows, who served as Donald Trump's chief of staff, is now a senior advisor for the group. And Caroline Wren, who used to fundraise for the former president, is raising money for it. Donors are being pitched on a dizzying array of Trump-adjacent projects, including Mike Pence's group and new entities being started by Ben Carson, Donald Trump's former housing secretary, Stephen Miller, his former White House advisor, and Russell Vought, the former director of the Office of Management and Budget, OMB. Corey Lewandowski, Donald Trump's first campaign manager in 2016, is said to be involved with efforts to start a Trump-aligned super PAC as well.
a diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions, Culture, Politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on March 21st, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. The enemy's endeavor to discourage the people from participating in elections.
Let me add that this is based on the information available to us. The espionage and the intelligence services of certain countries, the worst ones being the US and the Zionist regime, have been trying since a while ago, not today, to undermine the upcoming elections in Khordad. They either accuse the organizers, saying that the elections have been engineered. In fact, they level their accusation against the organizers of the elections or the Honorable Guardian Council, or they discourage the people by saying, your votes are of no consequence in improving the circumstances. So why would you tire yourselves participating in the elections? They're adopting these courses of action with complete intensity.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Is making the most of cyberspace.
And they are making the most of cyberspace. Well, the necessary regulations are unfortunately not observed in cyberspace, despite all my emphasis. In certain aspects, cyberspace is completely free of any supervision. Those who are in charge should be careful. All countries in the world are controlling their cyberspace, but we are proud of letting it roam freely. There is no reason to be proud of this in any way. Cyberspace should be managed. The people should be able to use it freely, and this is completely all right, but this instrument should not be put at the disposal of the enemy so that he will conspire against the country and the nation. They are taking advantage of cyberspace, and their goal is to reduce the people's participation in the elections with psychological methods. I hope that the people will reject and disappoint the enemy, and they will not forget about this important issue. This is the first issue which was about the significance of elections.
The significance of the presidency as the heaviest managerial responsibility of the country.
The second issue is about the significance of the presidency. The presidency is a very important issue. The most important and influential managerial responsibility is the presidency. Now, some people claim that the president has no authority, that he is a mere caterer, and that he has just 12-15% authority. I do not know how they calculate these things. It is several years now that they have been saying these things here and there, but all of them are untrue.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Around the world with reporters.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held talks with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Istanbul. The visit comes amid tensions between Kiev and Moscow over Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. Meanwhile, Russia bulked up its military presence on Ukraine's eastern border, threatening military action. During the meeting, the two presidents spoke about ways of cooperation in different sectors and strengthening ties between the two countries, including free trade, tourism, and sports. Following the meeting, which was also attended by ministers from both sides, a number of agreements was signed.
Turkey strongly defends the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. We hope that the escalation in eastern Ukraine will come to an end and the conflict will be resolved through dialogue based on the Minsk agreement.
The United States, after informing Turkey as per the Montreux Convention, sent two warships through Turkish straits towards the Black Sea. Turkish Foreign Ministry said the warships will stay in the Black Sea until May 4.
The tension between Russia and Ukraine is increasing every minute. Ukraine is waiting for support from the EU and the US. But Russia has clearly expressed that Crimea is its red line and will not give it to Ukraine. I think this visit is aimed at sorting things out. Ukraine wants to make sure that Turkey is on its side, especially after the phone call between Turkish and Russian presidents.
Late on Friday, Russian President Vladimir Putin discussed with his Turkish counterpart over the phone the Ukraine crisis and the presence of U.S. warships in the Black Sea. Turkish President assured that Ankara's cooperation with Ukraine does not mean it is against Russia. Analysts believe Turkey is trying to play the role of peacemaker in the region without taking sides. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
It was an utter shock for the destitute